The Know Your Gear Podcast.
Hey everyone, how's it going? Welcome to the Know Your Gear Podcast, episode 362. So what is going on with that is pretty simple. Sam Ash is closing all 40 stores. Instead of a month ago, we were talking about the 18 they're closing. They're now closing all 40 stores. And so there'll be clearance and out inventory till about June. So if that helps. If anyone's curious about that. Now, what does that mean? What does that mean? Well, first, there is talk of maybe they can get a Hail Mary pass investor. Somebody will come in and buy it out and save it. I told you guys I'm a pessimist, so of course, I'm the last person you should ask what I think of that. I'm going to say no, I don't think it's going to be very likely. Is it possible? Of course it's possible. I mean, there are a very talented group of individuals there, and they can probably, you know, hey, the store made it 100 years. I mean, I'm sure they can pull off anything, but I don't think it's very likely. And I don't even know if it's actually a very good decision, in my opinion. Again, we're just going to talk. This is, like I said, my show on Fridays is more of a water cooler talk show. I'm not a reporter. I constantly have been told by companies like, this is off the record, right? I'm like, yeah, I mean, look, if you don't want me to tell anybody, it's fine, but I'm not like a reporter. This is more like I like to talk about the week's guitar subjects. So the interesting things to talk about. There are some interesting things that we don't know 100% that are probably important to think about when it comes to Sam Ash. First of all, they're closing all the stores. Somebody asked if they're going to be closing the website and shutting that down. My guess is yes, but who knows? Do they operate as a website only entity? I don't think that's likely, but it is very possible. What I think's more possible to see the Sam Ash future is Sam Ash owns some other great brands. And although Sam Ash, the business, Sam Ash, the family, I believe, owns those brands, I don't think the store necessarily owns those brands. So I don't think they're attached to anything. And I haven't heard the word bankruptcy mentioned yet. I just hear closing. You know, as someone, I closed my store, but we didn't, obviously, we're going out of business in that way. Same like Sam Ash. It was an end of an era for us. We're going to go ahead and close the store and move on to something else. So in that case, there's no like bankruptcy where things have to be liquidated. I'm assuming they're going to pay out their vendors or negotiate to pay out the vendors. I would imagine, I'm going to imagine some vendors they'll negotiate to pay out and some they'll pay out. But here's what it is. They have some other great brands. They have Samson. If you don't know who Samson is Zoom. Samson is wireless units. It's PA systems. It's fantastic mixers, interfaces. They have that brand. They have Hardkey. To me, one of the three best bass amp brands on the market. You know, maybe I'm biased because I'm a huge Victor Wooten fan, but Victor Wooten uses it. So huge Hardkey fan, obviously. And then they own Michael Kelly Guitars. So Michael Kelly Guitars, as you know, I recently reviewed one of the guitars, and it was a fantastic guitar for the price. So is it possible the Sam Ash fam moves into the future of just having those brands, maybe even starting other brands? I think that could be a new chapter. Maybe it's a better chapter for them. So that's an important thing. There are some things, though, that I know that probably the guitar players that watching this aren't going to think about, but that it's very, really important. What I really think is interesting is you're going to have Sam Ash closing at the summer. And what's interesting about that is Sam Ash is a huge rental force. They rent a lot of band orchestra equipment. And so what's going to happen is Sam Ash is going to, people are going to return that stuff when school gets out. Okay, because Sam Ash will still be open. So people were returning that merchandise. What Sam Ash does with that, I have no idea. Okay, so they're not talking about that. So, I mean, I imagine that's different. That rental inventory is probably different than their what they're blowing out, whether they sell it to an entity or they try to do an online band orchestra rental system. I don't know. But what's interesting is I would imagine right now the music and arts people, the Guitar Center guys are, you know, everybody's like, oh, is Guitar Center going to take up all their stores? I'm like, I would imagine Guitar Center's music and arts would be really interested to see what happens when those kids return from summer break and they need to re-rent their band orchestra stuff. Because I don't know if you guys know, if a lot of you probably don't have kids, but if you have kids, they rent, you know, whether they're there in band orchestra, they rent instruments. And then for the summer, some parents will pay for them to have the instrument to practice it through the summer. Some parents are like, hey, look, you know, when you're renting a trombone or an instrument that's like $80 a month, they just go ahead and return it for the summer. And then when the kid goes back in school, they re-rent it. And what I would imagine is Guitar Center Music and Arts would definitely be looking at all of the Sam Ash locations that are closing and making sure that they can either contact those schools and get those band orchestra rentals. Or, as I've explained before, music and arts can get mom and pops to be a depot for them. So they'll contact mom and pop stores and say, hey, would you like to be a depot from us? You know, you're next to a Sam Ash. Music and arts will send flyers to the schools. It's a really easy thing to advertise. You basically tell, you know, Mrs. Smith, the teacher, Mrs. Smith, you tell her, hey, Mrs. Smith, we're renting band orchestra, send your kids here. And she hands out flyers and says, hey, this is where to rent your instruments for school. And they can go to their local mom and pop store. That's a depot for music and arts, which is Guitar Center. And the depots give them 20%. And so, you know, it's very common. A depot can do 20 grand a month in rentals. And I mean, if you're doing that math, that's $4,000 a month. And I know what you're thinking, like, that's a lot of money. That's not a lot of money. Everyone's gonna have different opinions, but you understand the rental process is like a week long. So like you're all hands on deck. You rent out all these instruments for about the first week of school, and then a little bit of stragglers the second week of school. And then you're pretty much not dealing with any instrument rentals. You're not collecting payments. You're not doing anything, just a little bit hit here and there. But you still get that $4,000 every month for months. So you're talking about a $50,000 a year income stream for a mom and pop music store. That's a pretty powerful thing. So, that's one thing that it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. I'm actually interested on the business side of that. I'm more interested about that than I am on the guitar stuff. The guitar stuff, look, it's not a shock if you've been here hanging out with me for the last couple of years, what I've been saying and what we've been talking about as guitar freaks about the industry and the market since COVID. Think about this way with Sam Ash. Think about this. If you were to Google right now, Fender Stratocaster, go to Google, type in Fender Stratocaster. I can tell you exactly what you're going to see. First, most of you are going to see a sponsored post by Sweetwater. So the first thing you're going to see is Sweetwater. The second thing you see is Fender Guitars, the actual Fender guitar company. That is the second thing you see. Then after that, you're probably going to see Guitar Center, then Musician's Friend. Those are the most heavily searched when you type in the word Stratocaster. Now, what's a problem is this is the new world, what we're talking about. A couple years ago, they got to compete online with Sweetwater and Guitar Center and Musician's Friend. But think about this, now they got to compete with Fender. I mean, so when somebody goes to Fender Guitar's website to look at a guitar, most likely they're not going to buy from Fender. But you can understand, most of the time back in the day, if you were going to the website Fender, you were like, look up some information about the guitar, find your local dealer, go check it out. Now, Fender's got to, or have it shipped straight to you from here. And so if that scoops a little bit of sales, I mean, so basically what I'm talking about is the dealers now have to compete with the vendors. So the people who are selling them the product is now selling the product direct. Like we mentioned, there's very few companies left not selling direct. Paul Reed Smith Guitars is one of them. But everybody else pretty much is selling direct in some way or planning to sell direct more in the future. And Dav Dablis, I'm saying your wrong name wrong. Sorry, says I typed in Sam Ash and the first thing comes up Sweetwater. Sweetwater pays an insane amount of money for those Google searches. When I spent 9 days or 9 days at Sweetwater, they showed me there's a full-time Google employee at Sweetwater's campus. So in other words, they do enough business with Google. They have a full-time Google employee that is there to help them on premises. It's a tough thing. Now, the next part of the question, I've been getting all these questions, so I hope you guys don't mind. I put a lot of these questions. I'm sure a lot of you guys are posting the same questions right now, but trust me, I got them all through the week. I got them earlier on the show, so I have them in order. This next one came from Brent, who says, hey, Phil, can you comment on Sam Ash's store closings? Which I am, he says, but there's another question that was from Spondit 72 says, how big of an effect will Sam Ash closing have on already depressed guitar market? Well, here's the thing. Again, we're just having this discussion. Okay. So here's what I think will happen. The Sam Ash is where Guitar Centers are the closest. The Guitar Center, like if it was a Guitar Center is nestled up across the street right next to it. I think the customers that were conditioned to go to that Sam Ash, I think a big percentage of them, I don't know. I'm throwing everything, anything I say percentage wise would be a guess, but say 60%. So I can feel like I'm pretty confident about what I'm saying. 60% will now walk across the street or down the street to that Guitar Center. So if you're a Guitar Center right next to a Sam Ash that closed, maybe you'll see a small bump in sales, going forward. Every Sam Ash that's not directly next to, and so, you know, not just Guitar Center, if there's a big enough mom and pop next to a Sam Ash, same thing. Right? In other words, a competitor. If there's a competitor right next to Sam Ash, the people that would walk to that Sam Ash door, they may go now out of habit to the store right next to it. Every Sam Ash that was more isolated, in other words, anything that had a 1 mile, and I'm not exaggerating, any Sam Ash that has at least, it's 1 mile to drive to the next music store, those customers are probably all going online now. That's just how that works. We know that because we don't have to guess in the guitar industry. We've seen what happens with other retailers and how the effect goes. You know, we've seen it with Petco. Petco, when they closed stores. We saw with Toys R Us, when they closed Toys R Us's. What would happen is some customers would go to the nearest Target, but most just started going online. So we kind of know that's what's going to happen. So obviously online will gobble that up. That will mostly be Sweetwater and then Guitar Center and Musician's Friend and then maybe Reverb. And I could be wrong about that order of those things, but those are my guesses. And that's what I think is going to happen. Now, I'd like to tell you, since we're talking about theories, these are all just my theories of what might happen, and this is what we're talking about. I don't think we'll make it to the end of the year without Guitar Center announcing some closings. So, and there's a bunch of reasons why I believe that. And I'd like to point out, so in case anybody at Guitar Center gets mad because I said that, I hope I'm wrong. I'm not saying that because I wish it upon anybody. I'm saying it because we're giving theories, half-cocked theories on things that you see. And that's from what I see, some of this hardship actually going to Guitar Center is a problem. When I mean hardship, not Sam Ash closing, just what's been going on in the market that's causing this. For the viewers that are watching this that are interested about Sam Ash and the closing and the deals, they are going to, like I said, they're going to be liquidating for the next few months, and they're going to liquidate the same way you would as a bankruptcy. What I mean by that is the first week, it'll probably be like a 5% discount. The second week, and again, these are just guesstimates. I'm just guesstimating. Second week, a 10% discount. Third week, 15%. It was so on and so on. And it won't go gradually. It'll probably go slow moving, 20%, and then jump right to 50, and then jump right to 70, and then jump right to 90. And those last three, the ones that you want, they're salivating for, those will happen right at the end, and there won't be as much inventory. It'll kind of be like, oh, wow, I never really thought about getting a, a fluorescent pink Epiphone, SG, but there's one here for 70% off or whatever is not selling. Because again, there's, it's not like they're liquidating out they're in a hurry. They are spacing this out over a good amount of time. There's some time to do this. So, I'm just telling you guys, so if you want to go and check out some deals, but I don't go there. Well, you should go anyways. Why not? It's a guitar store. You should go have some fun. But don't go to the Sam Ash this weekend thinking that you're going to see 70% off. It's just not going to happen. And if it is 70% off or above, it's on something that's, something that's probably damaged or they really need to get rid of and they know it's not going to sell, stuff like that. But it will be a gradual discount out instead of just a massive slash and go kind of thing. So I think that's the main subjects for the Sam Ash thing. I want to just say the Sam Ash family has always been amazing to me and this channel, and I mean that not even lightly, heavily. Sammy Ash himself has been, before his passing, was an amazing person I could call a friend. And Richard Ash and Ben Ash have been very polite. As I guys told you, Ben Ash reached out to me to do some clinics at the stores, And Richard Ash even has reached out in the past if I needed some information to clarify things on the podcast. So again, these people are very, I believe in them, very talented people. And I'm sure I've heard it already said, like Sam Ash passed, Sammy passed away. And then look, as a person who closed this retail store in 2017, I've told you before, I'm not saying there's no place for retail anymore. I'm not saying retail's doom and gloom. I'm just saying retail is not growing. It's not going to grow in the brick and mortar environment. Is it dead? Is it over? I don't believe so. I think it's going to shrink. It'll continue to shrink for the next 50 years, maybe, or let's just be safe, 20 years, the next 20 years. To absolute zero, I don't believe that. You know, I don't believe that it will go absolute zero. I don't think it's going to go totally the way of like the, you know, the DVD rental market that's almost non-existent. I think it's going to have a place. I think it's going to have purpose because of band orchestra rentals, because of lessons, because of first-time buyers, because people just need a community of music instruments. There's people who just love owning stores and being in the community. All that stuff will continue to go on for a long time. But when you're talking about who's going to be growing 30, 40, 50% in the next 10 years, it's going to be on the online environment. Brian says Sweetwater isn't overly upset. You know, what's funny about that is, you know, somebody asked me that. And I thank you, Brian, for saying that, because somebody sent me a thing saying, do you think Sweetwater is excited that, you know, excited they're going to get all this business? I believe Sweetwater, as a culture of people, because remember, Sweetwater is a business, but it's a group of people, and I happen to know a lot of them. As a culture of people, I think they're probably disheartened by this because they don't need the business. Like, I believe that if you were to go to Sweetwater, the company as a whole, as a group of people who work at that business, and tell them, you know, hey, you have a choice. You can put, you know, Sam Ash out of business, or they can stay around. I would believe, and I really believe this, that they wouldn't, they'd have no reason to want Sam Ash to close. The benefits to them are minor. They were already taking market share. They're playing a totally different game, as I've said many times. In fact, yesterday on the Zoom call with my patrons, I was talking about this exact thing. I said, people think I'm a Sweetwater fanboy. They think I love, you know, the Sweetwater guys. It's not that. I really respect the game they're playing. It is some next level stuff that the rest of the industry is not playing. And I have had so many meetings with so many friends in this industry years ago, mostly. Now it's almost all pre-COVID stuff and during COVID, where I would talk about Sweetwater. And then now later they go, man, I didn't see it at first, but yeah, you're right. This is crazy. Sweetwater is, everything is strategized. It's really smart. And they're looking at how do they grow constantly. And it's that doesn't sound that, you know, sound that great, maybe to some of you, not impressed. But I can tell you that most of the music guitar retail world right now is calculating how to survive. They're like, how do we, like you heard me talk about last week with the new CEO of Guitar Center, is like, here's what I think we can do to improve. Sweetwater's not trying to go like, how do we keep business coming? They're like, here's how we're going to kill and be better. And, you know, like they're just playing a new next level game. There's actually a teaser for you guys. There's actually something Sweetwater did recently that was really interesting, like game changing, and I can't wait to share with you. So you know, I actually reached out to Sweetwater to not to ask permission to talk about it, but to confirm it and to see, you know, what the temperature is on this and what the discussion is, because I have a theory of what I think this means for them going forward. It's again another strategy move where I think it's going to result with them making a lot more money, doing a lot less work, and again, strategizing a future. So we'll hopefully talk about that next week. I was planning to talk about today, but I would rather, if I can, and I please understand what I'm going to tell you, instead of talking about a rumor that I think is true, because it's been, you know, I've heard it from three really good sources, I'd really like to come at it next week with a confirmation discussion of it, and we'll, you know, and we'll talk about how cool it could be going forward. So that's my insights and thoughts on the Sam Ash doors closing. And like I said, we'll see what happens. But my guess is, this is my guess. My guess is the Ash family will focus on, either one of two things. They'll focus on the brands they have that I think are very, very successful and very good. Or maybe they'll liquidate those out and go to Aruba and sit on an island somewhere. You know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. So Let's see. Okay, let's go. Are we done? Does anyone have any more questions? Did I miss anything? Let me see if there was any more Sam Ash discussion so I don't have to timestamp it again later. I don't see any straight out questions. Let me double check this. Usually super chats are to the end, but I just want to make sure if there was a super chat about Sam Ash that can be connected to this. We'll keep the discussion going. Ray, thank you. He did a super chat. He says, hey, Phil, do you think Sammy expected no one to take over and close up the shop when he retired, passed away? And will somebody buy them out because that was the alternative? There was somebody to take over. So the last conversation I had with Sammy was, I forgot exactly what it was about, okay? But I know the subject matter. Does it make sense? You'll know why I'm saying this, what I'm saying in a second. Sammy was a person that I could call for advice. He was very helpful to me. And I wouldn't call him, you know, very much. I wouldn't mind burden him. But every once in a while, an industry topic, I'd go, I know this is coming up on the show Friday. This is going to be hell. And I would reach out to Sammy and I'd say, hey, man, I think it was something with Gibson. That's why I'm saying I can't remember what time, what controversial Gibson thing happened, but it was a controversial Gibson thing. And I thought, you know, why not talk to one of the biggest Gibson dealers in the country and find out what's going on. And Sammy was so kind. What he did was he's like, I'm going to tell you, Phil, what's going on. And you're not going to tell anybody that I'm the source. And I'm like, okay, you know what I mean? I'm good with that, right? Like, he's like, here's what's going on. And then we talked because, you know, I care about him. At that time, we were talking about COVID. I told him I was gaining weight. He said he'd been walking more and doing stuff. He was a very fit individual. So, you know, he was just getting out and stuff. And at that time, he was running, what he told me was he was running the used guitar part of Sam Ash across the country. He was handling used stuff. So I want to be clear that to some degree, my understanding was Richard and Ben were already kind of running things before Sammy retired or slash, you know, passed away, whatever, whichever came first in that situation. So I don't want you to think, I was not under the impression from Sammy himself that it was like a, you know, he's gone. And then all of a sudden this was thrusted upon somebody. I don't know. Cause again, we didn't know each other that well to talk about our personal health issues. So I was as shocked as everybody else that he had, you know, he passed away. Cause like I said, he was a very healthy, fit person. You know, the kind of guy where you go, you think he's 10 years younger than he is when you see him. And, but at that time he was, cause he told me over and over again, he's like, hey Phil, if you need anything used, you know, you make sure you call me, you know, and you let me know, I'll get it to you for cost. And he did. I actually got an Access from him, a purple one. And he gave it to me for cost. He was doing just that's what he told me. He was doing that stuff. So, answer your question, do I believe, he would be shot? I don't think this is all bad doom and gloom. Look, no one wants to see a music store close. No one wanted to see it when I closed my store either. You know, I still have customers to this day. I'll be at the Home Depot and they walk up and if I'm lucky, they go, hey man, I love your show. And then they go, but I'm really sad you closed your store. If I'm lucky, otherwise they just go, I'm really sad you closed your store. Or some people I get it a lot too, not often, but every once in a while, they don't know I even do YouTube and they go, oh man, I saw you close your store. What are you doing now? And I'm like, I work at this Home Depot. And the point is like I said before, when they announced the first 18 stores closing and why they were, you know, doing that, this could be, again, we don't know the whole story yet. They've been very upfront. They have been telling us, you know, what's going on as it happened. I know you're like, you know, that's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. Some companies don't make any announcements. So, you know, they don't put out any official thing. They just close and go away. So I don't know. All right. And on that, I think we've covered everything that was Sam Ash that I see that you guys wanted to talk about. And we'll see what happens. I'm really interested to see what happens with their other brands. I really am optimistic for those things. And I know I said I was optimistic for Sam Ash. I still am. I think these people, look, that you're going to see it, read it for all the people that are going to say, like, I went in the store and it wasn't great, or whatever you're going to say, because there's people always going to have an experience, good and bad. You're going to see an outcry of people. This is a business that's been in our industry for 100 years. Literally, without Sam Ash, there would be no Paul Reed Smith Guitars. Paul Reed Smith has been saying that for a decade. He said it on this podcast, much less he said it 500 times everyone else. The very first purchase order was given to him by Sammy Ash. And with that purchase order, he literally got the loan to build his new factory. That's a fact. And I have talked to, as you guys know, I've interviewed half this industry. And in those interviews, Sam Ash comes up a lot as, you know, as a huge part of that. So it's a massive loss to us as a community. But, you know, I think, like I said, this makes me want to buy a Harkey amp. That's what it makes. I go, I want to buy a Harkey amp. I'm like, I've been thinking about getting a Harkey 210 combo, and maybe I'll do it now. So, all right, let's go on to a new subject. Let's talk about some guitar stuff. I have some other stuff that was pinned that is interesting. Okay, so this one came from 251, who says, Phil, I'm very excited to see the custom G&L. He's talking about my custom G&L that they're making. Since I am a lefty, I'm curious about their customs, but their website is 20 years old, LOL. This is very outdated website. This is true. Yep. Kiesel has a better experience. Yeah, well, Kiesel, to give you a reference, Kiesel spends $1 million a year on their website. So, if that doesn't impress anyone, then you just don't know what this industry spends for things. $1 million for the website is an insane amount of money to spend for a company that think about this. I don't know how big Kiesel Guitars is, but I'm going to throw my guess. My guess is they're a $10 million a year company. That's my guess. And if you want to know how I guessed it, it's because Jeff says he sells about 4,000 guitars a year. And then in somewhere else in the interview, he said their average price is about $2,000-something. And then I was like, okay, and accessories. And of course, you know, he does a higher end market. So I just came up with those numbers and I go, okay, here's the numbers. And they're probably right. But my point is, yeah, their website is far superior to G&L's. Me personally, although I love the idea of the G&L custom shop, I want to point out over and over again that just what G&L calls a production guitar is more than what Fender Custom Shop calls a custom shop guitar. So if any of you are interested in buying a G&L custom shop guitar, although the policy on this podcast is if you ask if you should buy a guitar, the answer is yes. I would really take notice to the fact that this is how powerful a statement is. I always tell people, everyone's biased. What is the bias? Here's my bias. My bias is G&L built me a guitar. They didn't charge me for a guitar. I was allowed to pick whatever I want at that factory, and I did not pick a custom guitar. I just picked a production guitar, spec'd out the way I want. They're building me this current guitar. Like I said, this is a indefinite loaner. In other words, if I love it, I'll keep it. If not, I'll send it back and we'll probably do something else. Either way, same thing. Every time G&L's come and talk to me that I've been presented with, they will make me whatever I dream up in the custom shop. And I just don't, I'm not a type of person who's like, well, since I'm not paying for it, it's kind of like your friend's like, I'm paying tonight. And he's like, well, then I'm getting lobster and steak dinner. I'm going to get what I normally get. So, I might get a second beer, but same thing with this guitars. So with G&L, I really think that the production guitars, being that there's four or five, I can't even remember. It's how crazy this. There's like four or five different neck profiles, four different fretboard materials, three or four different fretboard radiuses, four different types of wood you can choose for the body. An insane amount of colors. I can't even count them on fingers and toes. That's all production. Variance is in, do you want a hardtail? Do you want a tremolo? Do you want these pickups? That's all plug and play production guitars for them. So I think unless you really can't find something in their production lineup, maybe go custom. But the reason I tell you that is, 251 says it's overwhelming. It is overwhelming. And think about this and all of that in the production cost. is priced at or about a production Fender guitar. G&L, what people have been missing for G&L for forever, and I said this when I did their factory tour, and this is came up, and I'll just tell you because it came up during the Patreon discussion. G&L, to understand G&L the way I understand G&L guitars, is their entire facility is 9,000 square feet. I know because you guys can see Jeff Kiesel and he talks, and I know you see Paul Reed Smith all the time and he talks. I want to give you a reference. Kiesel Guitars factory is 20,000 square feet. Kiesel has about 60 employees. I think Paul Reed Smith has 400 employees. I can't remember now. Okay. And I don't know how big the building is, but let's just say it's four times bigger than Kiesel minimum. Okay. So just put that in concept. Now, keep in mind, PRS as a company is 7 to 8 times bigger than Kiesel. Okay. So I want you just for reference. So PRS is like an $80 million, $90 million a year company. Kiesel, in my approximation, is about a $10 million company. More importantly, you have 60 employees at Kiesel and a 20,000 foot factory. G&L is about a 9,000 square foot factory. And I would bet you, I'm just to be safe, half the employees of Kiesel. So 30 people. So to reference of size and how many guitars are coming out of there, that is why they're able to do that. And I've been saying this for years. If Kiesel doubled its size, whoops, I dropped my headphones. If Kiesel doubled its size, this all this plug and play and make every guitar you dream of will go right away. It'll have to be more processed and has to move. Same thing with G&L. The reason you get G&L the way you get G&L is because of the small volume. It's why you can get a Master Belt Fender, anything you want from Fender, as long as you know you pay $7,000 to $10,000, because the production goes so small, right? And it slows down. So that is why I think you look at G&L. That being said, I'm always upfront about everything. G&L is, when I say companies are small, please understand, don't expect Amazon, don't expect the Costco treatment, don't expect, you know, Fender's call center, which is in Scottsdale. Well, I think they're further north now in Glendale. But anyways, Fender, I don't know how many employees. Think of this. Fender has more employees in their customer service call center here in Arizona than G&L has. Okay, period. So I think G&L customer service is like one person. Okay. And Kiesel, I think it's Cal. I think Cal's the guy who, by the way, is amazing. If you ever have to call Kiesel for anything, just talk to Cal. Anyone who says they have a bad customer service experience with Kiesel, talk to Cal. Cal was a nuclear fusion reactor technician on an aircraft here in the Navy. And he's I think he can bench press five of me. I'm not exaggerating. He's the nicest guy you've ever met. And he literally got out of the Navy and said, I want to work at Kiesel Guitars. And he just went down there and got a job. And he's been... And I've never seen him not smile. So if you call and you talk to Cal, I just want you to know two things. One, he's super awesome. And two, he used to work on nuclear reactors in the Navy. And he can bench press an insane amount of, insane. Okay. So that's who you talk to. You talk to Cal. But my point is, if Cal's on a call, you're going to wait. And if that bothers you, don't do it. So I get it all the time from customers like, oh, G&L, they're slow. Yeah, because there's like four people doing what 20 people need to do because they're a small company. So it's not excusing that. I'm explaining it. So you can get more for less. It's that, what's that stupid, I forget what it's called. Somebody will know. It's that chart. It's like you can have good and fast, but you can't have, you know, right? Cheap. You can have cheap and good, but you can't have fast. Think of it that way. You know, if you want a G&L, you can get a G&L that's as good, if not, in my opinion, maybe better than Fender Custom Shop for the price of Fender production, made on pretty much the same machines that made the original Fenders. But it's going to be slower. There's going to be hiccups. There's going to be miscommunications. It's just going to happen. So, and same thing with Kiesel. And you just be aware of that stuff. Yes, thank you. Lord GP, the Venn diagram. Thank you so much. I used to always love the Venn diagram. I never had the cojones to put it up in my shop. I always feel like, oh, that's so good. But I always feel like you should never, you know. I'm more customer service oriented, but I loved it so much. Okay, so... Okay. Any comments or questions on that? What are we talking about? So, okay, so that's a good subject. Thank you for bringing that up. And I'm very excited. And that's the reason why I asked them to film the entire process of building the guitar that they're sending me, because I'm going to take clips of that, highlight it, and let you see it. You're going to see the entire process of how this guitar was built. And the only thing that won't be accurate is the timeline, because I can already tell you right now, I bet you it's going to get built in a quarter of the time. That's just how marketing goes. You know, I'm sorry. They really want to get a video in front of you guys so you can start buying and ordering guitars just like everybody else. I've been very upfront about that too. Kiesel does the same thing for me as a courtesy. They do that for artists and for influencers. They'll fast track guitars for us a little bit. Although don't get, if that gets you all tied up in a wad, just understand fast track doesn't mean like a, you know, a week. It means like I can undercut you guys by a week. And they do the same thing to me as they do to you. Whatever they tell you, it's always a little longer. Whatever they tell me, it's a little longer. But again, I know because, you know, it's a smaller company. Okay, let's go to another subject. Amanda's been loading me up. Let's see what Amanda's sending me. Thank you, Amanda. Brian says, "Hey Phil, I hope that you have everything is. Oh, I hope everything is going well for you and your family. I love the channel. Do you have any suggestions on how to clean a Fender Tweed case? I tried warm soap and water." You know, I don't know. I can tell you what I mean, it's too late if you got stains on it. I did a video where I shellacked a Fender Tweed amp. I also shellacked my Fender Tweed cases. That's what I do. So, you know, if I was going to get, if I got another Tweed case for any reason, I would shellack it or seal it. That's just what I expect to do. Some people will tell you can spray with polyurethane paint and stuff. I don't do that. Like I said, a shellac is, watch that video. It's super easy. You know, it's like, and it's not very expensive. You just do it and it's kind of fun. It's kind of a fun experience. Other than that, somebody might have some good, you know, sadly enough, this is more of a, like a house clean. You could find a house cleaning channel on YouTube. And I bet you somebody's going to be like the queen of clean is going to be like, ah, here's how you get the stain out. But once you get the stain out, I'm telling you, shellac your Tweed case. I think it looks cooler and ages really cool. And you can mix it and thin it down however you want to be as thick as you want, thin as you want, dark as you want. It looks really cool. Okay, I'll just say Nikki. Nikki says, "Hey, Phil, what is the best way to tighten the input jack nut? I tried buying a special tool for it, but it don't fit most of my guitars." Well, I have the same tool. I have two of them. First of all, yes, because they make a one size fits all for that tool. And if you have the smaller metric one versus the larger standard nut, it doesn't fit. So here's what I did. Here's what I still have laying around. I have a lot of tools that are like, you know, the StuMac tools. And then I have a lot of tools that, you know, you just make because I was in a shop one day and I saw somebody else make it or I'd like to tell you I have all these great ideas, but I just travel and I pay attention. A philosophy I've always had is when I'm around anyone who does what I do, I just assume I don't know anything and I just pay attention to everything they're doing because I'm always going to pick up something. And so what I use on an output jack is I'll use needle nose pliers. And I had for a long time a set of needle nose pliers that you get at the dollar store. And I put shrink tubing on each side, you know, but you really don't need that. What I do is I just stick them in the output jack of your guitar, input jack of your amp, whichever one you're using. I open them a little bit and I hold it, and then I use a wrench to tighten it on the outside. And I use a spanner wrench. If you guys know, most of the videos you'll see, I use a spanner wrench. You can get the ESP one is my favorite one. It's quality. Everyone else's, I think, is not great. Music Nomad makes a spanner wrench that's a little thinner that gets under things, but I bent it and I didn't like the quality. And I understand they put a rubber felt, not felt, but a rubberized thing on the bottom. It's okay. But the ESP spanner wrench, I will put a link to it, but I'm going to show it to you. This thing is one of those things, like if I could suggest one thing in everybody's toolbox, this is it. It's at StuMac. It's $12.99 for those that signed up for the StuMac free freight deal. Check it out. For those, everybody else that wants to save some money, you could check it. Oh, 10% off. This is it. It's the ESP multi-spanner. Fantastic tool. Look at that. This is, woo, look at that. And then what I do is if you see here how they have the amp, I'm just going to show the amp. I stick the needle nose pliers in there. And I just open up a little bit to hold it steady and I tighten it. For those that don't understand. You don't have to crank everything down, okay? I've told you guys before, if it keeps coming loose, if you have an output jack on a guitar that keeps coming loose, what you want to do is get some Loctite. And then what I showed this to you guys before, Loctite, I think it's the pink Loctite. The problem for me over the years is that I teach more than I repair now. And because of that, I buy stuff and I don't go through it as fast as I used to. So I'm not always rebuying it. Loctite, thread locker, automotive high temperature. You don't need the high temperature, but it's purple. So I thought it was pink. I'm sorry. And why you want low strength is this, you just put a little bit of this on the threads. And when you tighten it down lightly with your spanner wrench, again, you don't have to crank the stuff down. In fact, most of the stuff that's made in the Chinesium metal, it just strips out and you just crush it. It's just all junk. But this stuff will fix all that because, like I said, it'll hold it together. And then if your output jack's going bad or you need to replace one day, you just hardly any pressure breaks it free and it's good. So I use that for three-way switches. I use it constantly for all kinds of things, bridges on guitars. It's just awesome. And so, you know, I've used all the Loctites because the first time I ever did it was probably 20 years ago. Some old guy came in and said, get yourself some Loctite. And I went down to the Ace Hardware and I bought some Loctite and then I did it and it worked, but I couldn't break the damn thing free. When I needed to next. So I learned. Steven says blue works fine. Blue works fine. But I'm going to tell you, so you know, Steve, if you have tons of reasons for Loctite, sure, find a compromise in blue. I think it's fine. But what I'm telling you is if you're using guitar stuff all day and you're going to use guitars, everything guitar, purple is more than enough strength. Okay. All you're trying to do, okay, it's not like a car where it's, you know, where the engine's vibrating like this. I mean, guitar vibrates, but it's very minimal. It's just, you're just trying to stop it from coming loose easily. So purple works, but like I said, whatever advice you want, whatever advice works for you is fine, but I'm just telling you what I use. Again, it's not what I think you should use, it's what I use. So I'm just, that's why I've been using it for ever. So there you go. All right, Voodoo Guitar, thank you for this one, Amanda, says, I have an import Jackson soloist. One of the frets was filed too short, okay, from the factory when it was rounded off. If I replace that fret, how will I know what size fret wire to order? You're going to need calipers. I highly recommend the StuMac ones because it'll be easiest to do because it has a little groove cut in them. You can pull the fret and check it. That's what I use. You don't have to use those, but it's one of those expenses where I think a good set of calipers is worth its weight in gold. And the StuMac ones are my absolute favorite. I have two sets of them because I bought a set and then they gave me a set because my set, I told you guys, every once in a while StuMac would send me new tools because my tools are so old, they don't look like the version now that they make. their concern was I'd be showing you guys and then you'd go on their website and be like, this isn't what he had. So I highly recommend the StuMac calipers, and that's what you'd use for that. And it's, you know what it is? StuMac, there's a lot of reasons why to like StuMac. The best reason to like StuMac, because obviously the prices are crazy, but you got to understand, for the hobbyist, it's like, I would say them and Music Nomad are really, really focused on making stuff to where if it's your first time project, this is great stuff. It's going to last a long time. And, you know, you're going to take out a lot of the guesswork out and it'll help you a lot. So that's what I would recommend if that helps. Okay. Let me jump over. How are we doing on time? Well, we're doing good. Let me jump over and hit some super chats if you don't mind. Let me take a sip of H2O. We have Sphase. Phase? I'm going to say Phase. Sphase says, looking for a Floyd Rose guitar with stainless steel frets. It seems there's little stainless steel fret guitars from the big boys. Jackson's new lineup looks really cool. I really like Jackson's new lineup, the new affordable USA line with the stainless steel frets. that'd be a way to go. I'm biased. If you want stainless steel and like a modern Floyd Rose style guitar, I mean, you know, I like Kiesel. Kiesel still uses Floyds, right? As far as I saw on their website, somebody mentioned, I think they said they stopped. Now I got to double check. Well, I'm just going to say, I'm pretty sure they do. I'm sure they're still using Floyds. But that would be a way to go. I mean, here's the thing. There's not a... Who else? Schecter? Schecter has stainless steel frets with Floyd Rose guitars. There's a bunch of Schecters. The Schecter that I love, the one I have, I think it's the Venom, that guitar comes in an option with a Floyd Rose guitar. That's a really cool guitar as well. So there is options out there with stainless steel frets and Floyd Rose guitars. But the Jackson one is pretty impressive. I have to tell you, I've been eyeballing it for a long time as well, especially for that price point. You know, Custom Shop Jackson's in the $4,000 up range, and it's just the same thing as what the production stuff. It looks the same. There's differences, but the differences are even less than what the core difference to S2 is. The difference is from Custom Shop to the production Jackson USA. Antique Rocker says, I don't like the overdrives played through reverb channel on my Fender Twin AB switch. Signal clean to reverb channel and a B through my overdrives to clean channel. Any potential problems with this? So what he's basically saying is he doesn't like running the overdrive into the reverb sound of his amp. He's using the Fender Twin, but of course they would do the same problem with the Fender 65 Deluxe. So he's using AB channel, AB box to run a overdrive channel into the part of the amp, the side of the amp, the channel that doesn't, because you can ride those channels simultaneously, that doesn't have reverb, and he's running as clean as reverb, and he's just ABing them. That's how everybody used to do it back in the day. You know, it's so you know, the channels without reverb on those Fender amps tend to sound better with pedals than the regardless of having reverb or not. They're voiced a little bit more differently, and I think they sound better with, so... Yeah, there's no problems with what you're doing other than it's just, you know, it's a process. You know what I mean? It's a more of a process. Me personally, look, if you want to do it that way, that's great. A suggestion for you, how I do it, I just run my pedal board and I have reverb on my pedal board into the front of the amp, and I don't use the reverb on the amp then. Some people don't like that. Some people do. It depends on how determined you are to get that real spring reverb. I really don't care. Like, I use spring reverb, but to be honest, I personally prefer plate reverbs over springs. So I'll use the plate or the hall reverb on the pedal more than I will use the spring, and I like it better. I once told my friend Matt, I said, all reverbs are fake. When somebody says it's real spring reverb, I'm like, no, it's not. Real reverb happens naturally through the acoustics. And so in a canyon, in a room, that's real reverb. If you were recording reverb for real, like they do in recordings back in the day, they found rooms or places that had reverb. And they made, and then Fender and other companies figured out they could make reverb approximations with springs, essentially an analog, you know, kind of a attempt to make reverb. We hear spring reverb through so many recordings that we like it, right? Because it's what you grew up with. It's the music you heard. The musicians used it. And so when you hear it now, your brain references that it sounds good because it sounded good when it was on those albums. But realistically, acoustically is the most accurate reverb. So my argument isn't that I, by the way, I love spring reverb and amps. I'm not saying I don't. I'm just saying I don't have a preference so strong that I have to have those, because to me, it's like, I like that. But I also, if I'm using a synthetic reverb in the first place, I have all these other great digital reverbs that sound great I can use as well. So I'm just telling you, first, yes, your idea works. There's no problems with it. But two, I just wanted you to know how I do it. Maybe just to give you a perspective. There's a different way of looking at things. So funny story. Somebody says, sing in the bathtub reverb. So in my office here, okay, so this is my office, to this wall, where I'm looking at, we have a closet. I have a closet, you walk in, it has racks of guitars in it. And then the other door on the other side is to the bathroom. So I have a restroom, and it's actually not a big restroom, but it's long. It's got a long hallway-ish thing to it. And it's all tiled and stuff. And so I actually record a lot with my amp in there. In fact, just to actually be totally transparent about the craziness, I don't just put an amp in there. There's amps in there now. In fact, what's in there now is my Marshall 2061 head in a Marshall 212 cabinet, my Freedman small box on a Freedman 212 cabinet, the Tone King head with the 112 cabinet that you saw last week here. That's why I was here. I pulled it out of the hallway area of the bathroom for a second to get to something, to move something around. I think I needed a mic stand or something. And so I'll record with no reverb, and that room makes natural reverb. I like it. So somebody says, was the water on? No. So because it's my office, it's kind of funny. Like it has a bathroom and then has like a so it's separated, right? So there's sinks, and then there's like this hallway thing, and then there's another room attached to it that has the commode and the, you know, as you and the shower and stuff. And I don't use the shower, so the shower is where I store stuff in there. Just sticks. So if you like open the shower curtain, you just see like I think Shauna stores stuff in there. She just puts stuff in there that you know we don't know what to do with. So somebody says, can you get a tour of office? You are. You just saw. This is the office. You're not seeing. There's a door right here that as soon as these guitars end and you're in a door, this is a window that lets me see out. So you'd see a window right here. And then there's two. Like I said, maybe we'll do it. But, I mean, there's nothing really. It's not exciting. It's just an office and a house. It's very unexciting. At least it feels unexciting. Okay. I want to do another. Here's Grumpy Mike Guitar. He says, for the Tone Jar, and why not? Not surprised about Sam Ash. I've had multiple issues with him over the last 7 or 8 months. Cheers. So I don't want to talk about that because, so Grumpy, Shauna told me you had talked to her and you were telling her that you were working on an idea for a video because she asked me about it. She's like, hey, you wanted to ask you a question. So she asked me the question. It was just easier to relay while I was doing something. And so I don't want to take, but in your situation, what was happening to you, I'll keep it not cryptic because I don't want to keep everybody out of it. But so Grumpy My Guitar bought a bunch of stuff. I'm not going to tell the whole story. So in case he wants to do his video, I won't ruin the video. I'm not going to ruin the ending of the story. He had bought some stuff on Sam Ash. And essentially what happened was after he purchased it, he got an email saying, hey, we don't have this. And then he's like, okay, and they cancel it and they do a refund. And then a couple days later, they email him and they go, oh, we do have this. Okay. And this happened to him a couple of times. And so essentially his issue, and so Grumpy, this will help you. The issue you were having was exactly what I was talking about, how antiquated their systems were. They weren't like pulling a fast one. It's because their system it's not very good. It's antiquated. It doesn't update very efficiently. It doesn't hold a lot of data. There's too many input ports for it. In other words, too many people have access to it. And I know you're going to realize, because his problem was slightly attached to a reverb at Sam Ash situation, but it doesn't matter. It's an inventory system problem. So if you haven't dealt with it, the best way to explain this is there's, let's talk about Tolman, okay? Because this will make things easy. At Tolman, which their warehouse is insane, right? Like I think Sam Ash's Sweetwater's is 500,000 square feet. Tolman's is bigger than that. So you're talking about over 500,000 square feet of warehouse space at Tolman. It's all robots and automated stuff. And literally, not only do they know where every single thing is, okay? You can push buttons and you type in like guitar picks and it literally a thing gets guitar picks and brings it to you and then you put it in the bag and you ship it to the customer. They know exactly what they have. They know exactly when to order it. They know exactly where it's at in the system. This actually ties into a couple things and explaining the differences of companies, which is where this show, I hope, helps people, musicians who want to know this stuff, maybe understand. Somebody was explaining on my Patreon page, they were talking about, you know, if you call Kiesel and ask where something is, they're like, oh, we'll find out. We don't know. And they go, well, you know, and they were talking about how Paul Reed Smith and Music Man, especially Music Man, they have barcodes on everything. And so what happens in Music Man is like they, you know, employee gets the body, starts working on the body, they scan it. So if you call somebody and talk to them at Music Man and go, hey, where's this guitar? They go, oh, the body's right now in paint. The neck is getting fretted. They know exactly where all the components are. They are. But the size difference of those companies are massive to do it that way. What happened with Akizel is, if you watch the end of the tour I did with him, he talks about this briefly, that they used to have a barcoding system, but they got rid of it. The reason they got rid of it is not that it doesn't work. It works. But if you've ever worked for a small company, a small business, a small group, if you're just you and a partner, you know, maybe you do a job and it's just you and somebody else that does that job, you know, sometimes big systems can be very cumbersome for when you just have a couple people communicating. So it was inefficient for them from their size. So same thing with this ties in, because look at Thomann and look at Sweetwater. Their inventory systems are dialed in. They know where stuff is at all times. Samash and Guitar Center's inventory systems are not that same level, as you know. Guitar Center is better, but Samash, the company, did not go as tech heavy as you can imagine. To give you a reference, I'm always, my majority of me, my personality is very positive, but every once in a while, you know, I get irritated, and it's very easy to see how I get irritated. the first time I got in this industry, the very first time I got in this industry, I was setting up my business, and the very first company I got, the big company I got to work with, was Fender, and Fender wanted my fax number, and I went, I don't have a fax machine. What the hell are you talking about? I thought they were kidding. And they were like, you need a fax machine. We're going to fax this to you. You're going to sign it and send it back. And I go, email it to me. I'll e-sign it and send it back. Are you kidding me? And they go, no, we fax. And I go, you're like the largest guitar company in the world. You're faxing? And I go, all the dealers fax. Everyone faxes. They go, look, Phil. This is what they told me. They go, look, Phil, half the dealers are 60 years old. They've been faxing for 20 years. This is how they do things here. And I'm like, this is silly. I can just send it to my phone. I'll e-sign it and send it back. Right? So you got to understand, the industry, it's a little antiquated, the guitar industry. It's not a tech industry. So, same thing. So some companies... really, everybody hedged their bets, okay? And the bets were, some companies like Samash hedged on the whole, hey, let's keep the current brick and mortar business model going. It's the way it works. Some companies like Sweetwater said, we don't want to grow stores. We're going to build warehouses and invest in all technology. And, you know, there's no ultimate winner in all this. There isn't, but there is. So, oh, you know, it's funny. Matt Harrison says, that's when you go to Kinko's. We had to go to the UPS store to fax. it took a year for Shauna to finally convince me to get a fax machine. I refused to buy a fax machine. I go, this is stupid. She finally did it because she's like, this one's a fax copier and printer. Can we get this? And I said, okay. But I was like, I refused to buy a fax machine. Everyone fax. Up until 2017, some vendors were still faxing stuff. So it's a weird industry. Corey says, I returned an amp for repair and they ghosted me after 3.5 months. My local shop, Drum City Guitar Land, emailed them. Within 2 hours, they shipped a new amp. Couldn't have done it without a local shop. You know, that is an interesting point, and that, Corey, can I tell you, thank you so much for bringing that kind of comment up, because a lot of times, and I mean a lot of times, when the direct-to-consumer through vendor versus retail store argument is made, I think everybody makes the wrong argument. And the argument is always like, well, vendor's never going to have customer service like a retail store. I'm like, look, they can hire your employees, okay? So when somebody goes, oh, no one does customer service like us, I'm like, You hired somebody to do customer service. They can do it too. And if Fender sells direct, I'm using Fender as an example, if Fender sells direct and they get to keep 30, 40, 50% more margin that they were given the dealers, they can take that money and hire the people to give you good customer service, right? So when people tell me that buying direct will never work because the customer service experience will never be the same as stores, I'm like, I call BS. I think it could totally be done. However, Corey has found the one argument that I can't figure out the angle on, which is this. What is nice about a retailer, like Guitar Land and Drum City, is that the retailer, when they make the phone call, okay, that company is not looking at a lost sale. They're looking at lost sales. So you have an amp and you call them and you say, hey, look, I need this amp replaced. And they're like, you're one person with one problem with one amp and you can go away. Okay. But when a dealer calls them and says, I want this customer taken care of and I'm the customer too, and I spend X amount of dollars with you, right? It's a big deal. Right? So there can be some weight given. So that's one thing that dealers do have the power to do for us is they can, and I don't mean just because of their big dealers. I'm talking about even a small dealer, because here's why. You know, when I would deal with any company, I would usually deal with a rep from that company. And I actually said this, I told you, sometimes I'm a nice person, but sometimes you can irritate me and I don't get belligerent. It's just not my personality, but I do have a mouth. and so let me tell you, this is a funny story happened with my Fender rep and me with an issue I had once had. And he's an amazing guy. So I just want to say he had to take a lot of grief from me. But anyways, what happened with him once was I was having a problem like yours. Customer was unhappy. I was unhappy. I needed this problem fixed. And I was telling him why it needs to get done. And I used the whole, hey, I want a divorce strategy, right? I went nuclear option. I'm like, I don't want to be a dealer anymore unless you fix this. And he said, which I think he meant to calm me down, but it really did not go in his way. He said, Phil, Fender wouldn't even notice if you're not a dealer anymore. And I said, yeah, but your kids will, and you will when you lose your commissions from me. I said, Fender doesn't need me. You need me because I'm buying from you. And you're getting commission from me. You need me. You need dealers. Fender will find another dealer, but it won't be your dealer. It'll go to somebody else. So you need to take care of me. And I didn't yell at him. I just seemed intense right now because we had that kind of relationship. And he's like, you're right. And he made the phone call and he told me, he's like, you're right. He's like, that's a great way of looking at it, right? Like, it's us. I said, it's not me against Fender. It's you and me. We're the ones. We're the working Joes. We got to make this, you know, we're the ones. I got to pay the mortgage. You got to pay the mortgage. We got to work. I don't care what billion-dollar Fender thinks. We got to work together. And they, at the end of the day, they want you to make me happy. You want to make me happy. I want to make you happy. And we both want to make this customer happy. We got to get this done. And so it doesn't matter. It's the same thing as what's happened with his amp. It's the dealer can speak up for you and they can have clout and weight. So that's one argument that I want to give out there when people say, the direct-to-consumer business model is going to suck if we lose the dealers. I absolutely think things like that are going to go to the wayside because the manufacturers will come up with more obstacles to drive us crazy. So that I always go ahead and concede to. I'm conceding to that argument. Great argument, Corey. Thank you for that. And thank you for letting me go on a tangent down memory lane. So Space Llama Pickups, that's awesome. If you guys don't know Space Llama Pickups, he makes these really great hand-wound pickups. What's great about, he doesn't need a commercial, but I'm gonna give him one anyways. You can check him out on Facebook, Space Llama. I bought a set of his pickups at the guitar show, I wanna say 2022? Does that sound right? Sounds right? It was like right after, like we could go outside without a mask or something. So, so he makes hand-wound pickups here in Arizona, very high quality stuff, super passionate. In fact, he's kind of a sleeper company. He's also a sleeper Instagram channel. If you watch him, man, he's, He burns the midnight oil coming up with new ideas and working on stuff and teaching a lot. If you want to learn about pickups, he's a good source for that. So his question, what is his? Any general advice for my next guitar show as a small guitar pickup company? I'm not really good at the guitar shows. I have gone to guitar shows, and I kind of have the same approach with guitar shows that I do with Sam Ash. When Sam Ash, the company, said, hey, let's do a clinic, and I said, okay, I said, well, here's the problem. You know, you're going to fly me out. You're going to put me in a hotel. 30 people are going to come. I'm going to talk. And essentially what I did for Kiesel, right? You're going to fly me out. Well, I drove out. You're going to drive out. You're going to put me in a hotel. I'm going to talk to a few people. I talk to 1,000 people live on a Friday show, and I can get 30,000, 40,000 views. I go, it just doesn't make sense logistically for you, much less for me, but more importantly for you, right? Now, keep in mind, I'm kind of dumb, as I admit, because I would make more money doing that than I would do doing this. But my logic is, why pay me more to get less? So, Space Llama, this is where I wish I had great advice for the guitar shows. I don't know what benefit you get going to guitar shows. There's a sense of community. So like the guitar show that's here in Phoenix, where you can drive to Roberto Venn, I think you're 2 hours away, 2 hours, maybe set up a card table. I think the mistake, again, this is just, you asked for the advice you're getting. I think the mistake is thinking about sales. You got to go to those things as marketing costs in your head. You're just out there shaking hands and meeting people, and maybe even go to give pickups away. But keep in mind, your ROI is going to be nothing. Return on investment. In today's day and age, I'm not saying the only way to go to social media. And I know I'm on social media, so everybody's just going to go, oh, of course, he's always going to say social media because that's what he's on. I make more telling people about guitars now than I did selling guitars in a store, and that store did 7 figures a year. I'm not making a lot of money, but I'm making more money than I did investing hundreds of thousands of dollars into a business. I started my YouTube business with a cell phone. I started my store with $30,000 worth of capital is what I started with my store in 2004. That's what I had mustered up to start the store with. Okay. And then some just debt and loans and a heart and a prayer and go. Okay. So you got to understand, the barrier to entry to social media is zero, basically. And I know you're probably looking at it, and everybody does this, anytime I can give this speech, I'll give it. Everybody looks at it like, I'm only getting 1,000 people. I only get 30 people look at my video. I only get 30 people look at my picture. I only got 12 people. I'm like, literally at no cost. You go to these events, you'll get 30 people for $500. You got to keep just making more content. Your content is great. Your pickups are great. You just need marketing. You need to focus on the marketing. I've said this before. Look, I hate saying this publicly, but you asked the question publicly. The barrier to entry to make pickups is very little, and the cost to profit is huge, okay? In the guitar industry, there's only a few products that make as much money as pickups. It's not hard to figure out pickups, everybody. Go to Mojo Tone, or go to Stumac, who everybody says is overpriced. Look at what a pickup kit costs. Look at a spool of wire. Think about what it costs to make that, cost materials-wise. And then compare that to what people charge for it. You can see there's a huge amount. Now, the huge amount is for the work, the expertise, and the trial and error. But I'm just saying, the margins on those are very good. Pickups have a huge margin. And so what you have to do is you have to understand that anytime you're in a business where the margins are better, don't get greedy and think, oh, I get to keep all that. That's marketing. You have to pay for the marketing. Because I just told you the problem. The barrier to entry is a Mojo Tone winder and 8 videos of learning how to make pickups and 1 pickup class. And so you guys know, Space Llama helps teach a pickup class at Roberto Venn with Arcane. Is it Arcane Pickups? I hope it is. Because I keep forgetting which pickups companies do it. But my point is, you know, you're out there teaching people how to do what you're doing, which is great, which is why I think, you know, why I like Dylan Talks Tone. I like anybody who's got the craziness to think that, hey, here's a smart idea. I should teach people what I do and charge them for, and then hopefully they'll still pay me to do it. That's how my logic worked for repairs. I'll teach people how I do the repairs, and hopefully they'll still want to pay me to do them. But in your case, I think you're doing great. I think you just need to keep putting out, more content. And you're going to have to find somebody to promote your pickups a little bit, you know. And don't go, oh, I'll get Rick Beato. Everybody's plans, you know. It's not you, and I'm not saying you said this or you're thinking this, but every time I talk to a small company, they're always like, how do I get Tyler Larson from Music Win? How do I get, Dobie Doss? How do I get Marty Schwartz? How do I get Rick Beato? And I'm like, you need Ben Coombs. You need the Bald Shredder, right? You need Landon Bailey. You need Jalen or Jay. You know what? You need me, right? You need channels. I know my channel subscription right is a little different than those guys in some degree, but you understand we're talking to the same type of audience, okay? And we're saying we have different ways of approaching the same thing, but we're different. But the point is that you don't need 100,000 people. You need 10. And then once you get 10, then you need another 10. And you need another 10. And you need to build your community out and do it that way. So that's my recommendations for that. And I don't think I would go to guitar shows unless you're okay with losing the money and getting that return. I'm not saying, and by the way, I'm never saying not do that. I'm just saying, please do the other things with that, because the other things are gonna give you better ROI. You're gonna make more money and grow faster on the platforms that don't seem like it's moving, but it is moving faster. I hope all that kind of makes some sense as whatever I can cover in a few minutes on a podcast. MP Kramer. Thank you for the huge super chat. Funny, MP Kramer, I think you're like, I see an MP in the army and his name's Kramer. Okay. So it says, hello, Phil, hopping in and out. My youngest daughter is graduating from UCF. $25 for the whipped cream research and development fund. So that's funny. So I think the reason he's giving the super chat is because I was talking about this with the patrons about the fact that all my friends that grew up in Tucson, and my wife, of course, grew up in Tucson, and all her friends and all her family, we all say the same words. And because of the podcast, because of you guys, you lovely, amazing people that watch the show, making comments about the weird things I say all the time, over the years, because I've done so many shows, every one of my friends or family members have watched one or seen a piece of it, and they have all reacted to the same way, going, "You're not. Why are they saying you're saying it weird?" And I said, "I don't know." And one of the things is I say "whoop cream," WHOOOP. Whoop cream is whipped cream is whoop cream. here we have a list. I'll say it real quick. Everyone I know that I grew up with says frustrated, no R. So the first time I said frustrated on the show, and you guys, are you saying fuss instead of frustrated? And I said, yes. After the show, I asked everybody, go, how do you say frustrated? And I did it with hard R, and they go, frustrated. And I go, yep. Including, Shauna's parents all did it that way. Was there a list? I thought we had a list of the words, cause they were, words we say, warsh. Somebody caught me on that on a show. I said, you have to wash it. And they were like, are you saying wash it? And I'm like, yeah, it's wash. This is what we figured out. And so, Brian says it's the deep south of Arizona. Here's what's funny about this. Okay. So I'll cover this and I'll say this at the end of the show, but I got a couple, no more super chats, but I got a couple of super chats I got to clear out. But here's what's funny about this. The majority of us are military brats. If you live in Tucson, Arizona, if you grew up in Tucson, Arizona, especially when we did, the two economies are retired people and the Air Force Base. Okay, Divus Mothen is huge training Air Force Base, and it's a training Air Force Base. So literally tons of people are cycling in and out. So you're going to get a lot of people there. Plus it has a giant, the world's biggest graveyard of airplanes, the Boneyard and stuff. So there's a lot of activity there. So it's a military town. So everybody's there as a transplant. My wife's parents, essentially my parents, my mother, most everybody that we know is from the South. So like Shauna's parents, I just use them as an example. they're Southerners. Like, if you heard them talk, you would think they are from Texas, because they're from Texas. So they have Southern draw. They have Southern tone. We grew up, all of us and my friends, most of us, with parents that have Southern draw, Southern tone. But we talk like Californians, because Arizona is like it's Calzone. It's like hybrid of California. And then, so apparently all these words that I use on the show that people have been saying, it's been an interesting topic of discussion for friends and family that are from Tucson, saying we're all learning together. Like, that's not how you say those things. Yeah, washing machine is a Midwest thing. Yes. Oh yeah. And trust me, it's I say Southern, but you understand, it's really just a hodgepodge of, like, no one was really from Tucson growing up. We were all just transplanted there. Like I said, we came from for different reasons. Yeah. So it's you're around a lot of people have different ways of talking, and then it literally changes the way you grew up and talk. So I don't know. So that, thank you, MP Kramer, for bringing that subject up. I think this is the last one, and let me double check that before I say that. It's not the last one. That's why I got to double check things. There's a couple. Rich says, "Hey Phil, looking for a good 2-channel amp, and I'm drawn to the Jet Black. I love the Jet Black. I also keep thinking about the Amplified Nation. Any advice?" Well, Amplified Nation is a different animal than Bad Cat. Bad Cat is like, the Jet Black to me is like this Voxy Marshall thing happening. It's great. Amplified Nation, I always wonder, because I love the Bad Cat so much, and when I talk about them, sometimes I overpraise the Amplified Nation ones, and I always wonder if the Bad Cat guys are going to be like hurt a little bit. Like, hey, why do you guys love... Amplified Nation to me is on another level when it comes to what they can do, but they got another level of pricing. It's very expensive. I really love the Amplified Nation stuff, and I really like the Bad Cat stuff. Of all the amps I've played from Bad Cat and Amplified Nation, my favorite amp is the Ampliphonics and Gain. The Jet Black would be my second one. The third one would probably be the... why can't I think of it? Reverb... Something Reverb. Whatever the first Amplified Nation amp I reviewed, Something Reverb, which was a crazy expensive one. That would be my second favorite. Then the Steel Strings... No, then the Bad Cat, then the Steel Strings Singer. So, but they're different animals. And so one thing I like about the Amplified Nation amp, the Ampliphonics Gain, is, man, I can get the Saldano high gain thing out of it. I can get clean out of it. I can have a great pedal platform. The Jet Black is pretty impressive on every level too. It's a money thing though. To me, it's a money thing. If you don't want to spend the money on Amplified Nation, get the Jet Black. You won't be sorry. You'll be like, that's a great amp. If you don't care and money's just, hey, this, I'm just going to make myself happy. Oh man, I think Amplified Nation is a great way to go. It's a great amp. So like I said, you have a great problem, my friend. Do you get a really great amp or a really great amp? It's really cool. That's the input I can give you on both. Clan of House Cats says, birthday's tomorrow, so I bought an 8-string Majesty. Well, that's an impressive guitar, my friend, and happy birthday for that. 8-string Majesty is a very unique guitar. I really enjoyed, when I was interviewing John Petrucci, my favorite part of the interview was talking about the 8-string guitars. And I was really impressed with him, obviously, as a person, as a player, but in the interview, I really enjoyed that discussion. And I really loved how upfront he was about it. He wanted to try it. It's kind of a one-time thing. I can't imagine they're going to make 8-strings for a long time. And so I think it's going to be one of the rarest Majesties they ever make. That's the impression I got from that interview and some of the discussion post and pre the interview. So Randy says, hey Phil, who do you think is the most innovative guitar company? I mean, of all time in history, Fender. I'd say Fender. As lame as that sounds, I mean, we already discussed I'm a pickup truck and a Strat guy, so it's going to be Fender. Innovative guitar in history, Fender. From results, not even preferences, just results. I don't think there's anybody even been close. Gibson would be the close second, but I don't think they're as close. And I wouldn't argue if somebody said, no, it's Gibson than Fender. But to me, here's what Fender innovation. Innovation in so many levels. Innovation with the tremolo system. Innovation with the pricing system. Innovation in the availability system. Innovation in the way the guitar sounds. Innovation in the way the guitar feels, the comfort, the curves. You know, it really just interesting stuff. I think Fender is the most innovative guitar company ever in history. It'd be my by results. Keep in mind, there's a part of me, it's like, who do you think makes the best hamburgers? And it's like saying McDonald's because it's the most volume. I'm not really kind of happy with my answer, but I'm just honestly, without having, you know, hours to contemplate and write down graphs and charts about it, I'm going to say Fender. Johnny says, Band-Aid fun for your outdoor adventures. Thank you for the super chat. I do have a kit on me, so you know, whenever we go hiking, and when we go paddleboarding, we do have a medical kit with us. Especially as you guys know, last year, Shauna found a rattlesnake in one of the hikes, and then last Sunday's hike, we were hiking, and some hikers right before us said, "Hey, just so you know, there's a rattlesnake up there," and he doesn't seem too happy, and we're like, "All right, we're not going to go next to him." So yeah, first aid kits are important to have. All right. On that note, I want to thank everybody for hanging out today. I hope you guys had fun. I had fun, a lot of subjects. I want to thank the moderators for sending me questions and for handling things and handling links and stuff. As always, you guys are the best. I want to thank the patrons and the channel members for sponsoring the show because, I mean, it's literally what pays the bills. So that's always great. I want to thank you guys for watching, but more importantly, if you subscribe or if you like, because although that doesn't cost anything except for some time and some effort, that time and effort is very powerful, and I really appreciate you guys doing that, especially since we're getting so close to 400,000 subscribers, and let's be honest, it's just bragging rights, right? It just feels good to say 400,000. I can be like, almost 500,000. You know, I don't know. Maybe that'll impress somebody at a coffee shop in the drive-thru. On that note, thank you guys so much. As always, till the next time, know your gear.
Today's episode of the Know Your Gear podcast is brought to you by Patreon members, channel members, and viewers who like and subscribe.